Hello, I'm Aaron Renna, the Urbanophile, www.urbanophile.com, and I'm here today with Charlie Hales, Mayor of Portland, Oregon. Mayor Hales, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Aaron.
Portland is a city that punches well above its weight in the national consciousness. It has a population of 603,000 in a region of 2.3 million. That makes Metro Portland the 24th largest region of the country, but it's really a far more influential city than that, really known as the exemplar of what a city of its size can be when it comes to urbanism. Portland is known for its urban growth boundary, its transit system, bicycling, artisanal everything, outdoor activities, so much more. Frankly, it's probably a city that needs no introduction. Mayor Hales is a Democrat in his first term as mayor, but he's not new to Portland politics, having previously served on the city council both before and after stints in the private sector. So once again, Mayor Hales, thank you for joining me.
You bet. Thank you.
I hear they call you Choo Choo Charlie. What's up with that?
I wear that proudly because I've had a bit to do with Portland's transit success story. There have been a lot of us who are parents of that success, but in fact, I was city commissioner in charge of transportation when we opened the first modern streetcar line in America, and was also really involved in several of the light rail projects that have defined our city and have shaped a lot of our growth. So I'll wear that label proudly for my municipal work. And then I also spent the last 10 years, one of those stints in the private sector, working for a large engineering firm, HDR, and helping cities all over the country develop their first light rail or streetcar system. So we've exported that idea from Portland to a lot of other cities, and they're either building them or opening them at a great rate now.
Right. Well, that's what I say about Portland being an exemplar. You go to everywhere, you know, Cincinnati, Indianapolis, where I live. You know, every mayor's been here. They do the pilgrimage to Portland to see what's going on.
Yeah, we've tried some things first, and I think one of the great benefits of this dialogue around the country is that we did try some of these things first. They worked, and Portland's not that different from all those other cities. In fact, there's a wonderful citizen activist in Cincinnati, a guy named John Schneider, who's been bringing delegations from Cincinnati to Portland for the last decade, hundreds of them. He's buttonholed civic leaders and corporate folks and said, you got to come see Portland. And he makes the point that, look, these are both river cities. They're about the same size. They have, you know, a downtown waterfront. You look at the physical similarities and then some of the big cultural icons like universities, and there's a lot of commonality between Portland and Cincinnati, but Portland's done this and we've not, and let's see what the delta is, and maybe we should do some of what Portland's doing. So it's been a valuable dialogue, I think, and in that dialogue, Portland's learned from other places as well. It's not like we've always been the teacher in this conversation. We've learned a lot from Vancouver, British Columbia about high density housing and parks. So I think it's really healthy for cities to compare notes.
Well, I think that's one thing that's different about Portland versus, say, New York City. I mean, New York City is one of a kind. It's so huge. It's so different from everywhere else. You can learn from New York, you know, but Portland's example applies to a lot more places.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there are world cities, and then there are cities that might have a global connection like we do, but are, you know, cities of their own place. And Louisville, Cincinnati, a lot of those cities are parallel to us in that sense. You know, we also are involved in the C40 group of cities around the world that are trying to do something constructive about climate change because our national governments aren't moving very fast. And Portland's in that group for the same reason. Like you said, we're punching above our weight. Is that we're in there with folks like Sao Paulo and Johannesburg and Berlin and London, and we're there because we have actually been effective on that front. We've reduced per capita carbon emissions by over 30% in Portland, and total carbon emissions by 11%, even in a city that's growing quite fast. Well, we've done that with transit, those choo-choos and other things, but we've also done that with green buildings. We're a national and international leader in green buildings and in managing stormwater effectively and 100 other things that we've done as a city to try to live in concert with our natural environment better and use a lot less energy to get around.
A lot of those sorts of things people know about because everybody's read articles about Portland. Everybody's got this idea about Portland from the many, many articles that have been written on it, some of these pilgrimages, or they've watched Portlandia. How does the real Portland differ from this idea of Portland that everyone has in their head?
It does in some ways. I mean, like all good caricatures, Portlandia makes fun of some things about us that are true. I mean, we do love localism. So Colin the Chicken, you know, mm-hmm. is somebody that we would care about here in Portland. So everybody's seen that bit on Portlandia. And we are, you know, relentlessly earnest about our values. But I think the deeper part of that is that this is a place that people come to because they know they can actually live their values. If you are a creative young professional and you want to live in a city that's actually connected to nature but also connected to the global economy mm-hmm. and to software development and film and video and a lot of the things that those creative people are working in, they know that they can actually live the way they hope in Portland. Mm-hmm. So we resemble the caricature in that sense. There's some other ways that we don't. You know, we're still an industrial city. We're a big hands port industrial city. We build boxcars and barges. We just cut the ribbon on the biggest dry dock in North America last weekend. So we employ a lot of welders and steel fitters and plumbers and pipe fitters and, you know, all those hands-on trades. We build trucks here. We build boxcars, we make steel pipe. You know, there's a lot of traditional, quote-unquote, old economy, quote-unquote, industry here. Oh, but we still need boxcars, and we still need pipe. So I'm happy about that part of Portland, and it just doesn't show up in the caricature at all. Another part of Portland that doesn't show up in the caricature is there are a lot of great neighborhoods in Portland where you really can walk to the farmer's market and go to a local movie theater, and there's a brew pub, you know, right down the street, and all those parts that you expect in a great urban neighborhood are there. Mm-hmm. That's only about half the neighborhoods in the city. The other half of the neighborhoods are places that were half-baked suburbia when they got annexed into the city, and we're trying to make them complete communities with a local economy in that neighborhood and those kind of services that you can walk to. And oh yeah, in many cases there aren't even sidewalks and there's no neighborhood park. So we're spending a lot of effort and money on trying to retrofit those suburban parts of Portland to not be physically identical to the old neighborhoods, but have those ingredients of a complete neighborhood that Portlanders like to see.
You know, when I was flying in, especially along the rivers, you notice massive quantities of industrial lands, including a lot of petroleum storage depots and things like that that you don't associate with Portland.
That's right. No, and we're a big commodities exporter. We export more wheat than any city in the world. We export minerals here. We even export oil to other U.S. Ports. Domestic oil that comes in on rail cars. So I think people, that, again, don't have that image of Portland, that we're a port industrial city. Now, we're a clean industrial city. We have strong environmental regulations in Oregon. So you can fish in the river right there by that port facility. In fact, you can swim across the river in downtown Portland now because it's so clean that it's safe to do that, and that wasn't true 5 or 10 years ago. We spent $1.5 billion cleaning up our river to get the sewers from overflowing into it. So we've done our work of being a green city, but we haven't lost our industrial base in the bargain, and few American cities have accomplished that.
Is the industrial base long for this world, though? Because you see a lot of industrial territory in Portland that's rapidly being converted into condos. I mean, construction just all over the city. It's like sheets going out. And, you know, one of the things that I clearly see in these creative businesses, just ad agencies, architecture firms, transit consultancies, those places employ relatively few people, very high skill, trading around the world at the highest level, but don't have that pyramid or that tail that gives a future to the B-plus grad of your local high school who may not be going to college and maybe qualified, but isn't that. So is that industrial kind of sustainable for the people who aren't in the creative elite?
We think so. And in fact, there are a lot of jobs in the creative world that are good ones for people without a college degree, too. We have this great new program now underway in Portland called Code Oregon, where a local business a local software company called Treehouse Software is partnering up with our workforce agency, Work Systems, to create 10,000 free slots for people to go online, develop the skills to be coders. Hmm. Now, not everyone has the personality or the skill set to do that work, but it's open to all. So we're aiming particularly at people that might not want to go all the way through college or might just have a high school degree but want to work in that technology field. But back to the core of your question, we don't regard that traditional industry as just a quaint antique that's going to all get displaced by condos and brew pubs. In fact, we actually have specifically protected the land on which all that industry sits. You're right, there's some areas in the city that are converting from old warehouses full of machine parts to old warehouses fixed up full of software designers. That's intentional, and we've done that by planning. But we also have huge industrial sanctuaries in the city that are just that. No, you can't get a zone change there. In fact, there was even a notorious land use case about 10 years ago where someone proposed to put a Costco in the middle of one of these industrial sanctuaries. They spent $1 million on consultants and lobbyists, and they still lost at the city council. And now it's a giant roofing supply company. So that site is reserved for industrial use, and that's what ended up there. So we're pretty resolute about keeping that industrial base. And again, the new dry dock last weekend that's going to be able to work on 1,000-foot-long cruise ships is a good sign that we still do have calloused hands here, even if we've got our brain in the new economy.
You mentioned something about older neighborhoods without proper infrastructure and sidewalks. And I know this has been one of your big topics, and you've proposed a street fee on, you know, buildings, commercial and residential, in order to help pay for that. If you look at America, we've got vast amounts of infrastructure that we cannot afford to maintain with the current revenue streams. I mean, I'm talking about maintain. I'm not talking about building anything else. We have lots of neighborhoods across America that are like what you described, older, built in an era when standards were low, don't have everything. And we don't really have a plan. You've got your street fee, and that's obviously been highly controversial. Do we just need to have a frank and candid conversation about infrastructure in America that we're just not having right now?
Yeah, we need to have that conversation, but we also need to do what we're doing here in Portland. We're going to, I believe, enact that street fee next month and have it in place and start putting that money into those urgently needed street repairs and, in some cases, additions of things like sidewalks that were never there in the first place. And we're doing that because we have the political will to do so, and we're not going to wait on Congress to do their job. And I wish they would do their job. I wish they would pass a transportation reauthorization bill. I wish they would move the gas tax from where it's been stuck for 21 years at 18 cents. That's crazy. What did 18 cents buy 21 years ago versus now? Well, not as much asphalt, I can tell you that. Mm-hmm. So the Congress is inert and running for cover. And those of us at the local level are going to have to step up on this stuff. So cities and state legislatures are going to have to do the hard thing and pass tax increases to maintain this stuff. It's not beyond our ability. I mean, this street fee that we're going to be imposing in the city of Portland, assuming it passes the council this month, is going to be about $8 a month for the average family in Portland. Well, that's pretty bearable, really. And compared to the cost of decline, it's a bargain.
Do you think this fee is sufficient to cover all these streets and maintenance? I mean, guys like, was it Charles Marone from Strong Towns? And basically said the math just doesn't work in America. We're just going to have to declare bankruptcy on some of this infrastructure.
Nah,
what's your take on that?
You know, incrementalism has its place, and this is an increment. This, you're right. This is not going to solve the whole problem. We're not going to be able to dust off our hands and say, okay, we got our streets taken care of. We don't care what Congress ever does. No, Congress still needs to act, and our state legislature still needs to act. But at this rate, we'll at least be able to do a better job of maintaining our local streets and hope that the feds and the state do their job to maintain the infrastructure that they own. My point here is that this is about political will. it is not inevitable or immutable that America is going to watch its infrastructure decline. It's a choice. Mm-hmm. It's a bad choice to dither and do nothing, and it's a good choice to step up and do something. And I think you'll see more cities doing what we're doing here in Portland, which is to say, we're going to act locally and then keep the pressure on Congress and the State House to do their part, too. Mm-hmm.
There was another article in the New York Times recently about Portland, basically Portland where, you know, young people go to retire.
Right.
The idea is, you know, people come to Portland and they can't find jobs. How hard is it really to find a job in Portland?
Not hard. In fact, I think it's 4.8% the unemployment rate among 25 to 34-year-olds here, lower than New York, lower than a lot of places. We're the third greatest city in terms of college-educated immigrants moving here deliberately. They move here, and then not long after, they find work or they create work by starting their own business, because we're a very entrepreneurial city as well. So I did this in 1979. It's not an original thing for Portland. In fact, you could say it's been happening since Lewis and Clark, that we've had people immigrating here from elsewhere because they saw some opportunity here. We've been absorbing those people as they come to Portland. They find work. But that's the value set of that 25 to 34-year-old cohort. They care about quality of place, quality of life, and what they're going to do when they're not working. And that doesn't include, say, sitting in traffic in suburbia. So they like the idea of living in Portland, and they come here and try to make it work. And most of them do. Again, we have a better employment situation for those folks than New York City does. So it's not true that young people come here and are stuck in jobs that they're way overqualified for indefinitely. That happens for a while to some of them. But again, we've got software jobs going begging here. I just talked to a local entrepreneur who's adding a bunch of new engineering positions in their tech company, and they're going to import most of those people to Portland because we don't have enough of those folks walking around with those degrees in Portland today. So I would say to any young person who's contemplating that, yeah, do it. You know, the mayor did it. Worked for him.
You know, when I looked at the stats, Portland's unemployment rate was above the national average in aggregate for 14 years. And then in 2013, it went below the national average. Now you're significantly below the national average. What changed in that period that drove it, that's driving like the uptick in the economy? Because the people I know who had trouble finding work in Portland, it was in the 2007, 2008, when the economy really fell off a cliff nationally. What's kind of changed in the economic dynamic since then?
I think it's already changed pretty significantly. One is that our software and tech industry really has grown and has reached critical mass. Secondly, the flight to the suburbs for office employment really was a round trip. And the suburban vacancy rate in Portland is quite high, and the urban vacancy rate is crazy low. And that's a pattern you see around the country. Our downtown office vacancy rate is under 1%, which is essentially completely full. And people are building new office buildings to respond to that situation. Meanwhile, it's 12 or 13% in the suburbs. So the pattern of shifting to the urban core, of valuing quality of place and quality of life, those values and preferences have started to create major currents that send economic activity our way. So I don't think that's a short-term phenomenon. We're not going through another real estate bubble here. We're going through a sea change in how the economy works. It is more urban. It is more about the creative and intellectual pursuits of software and engineering and medicine, and Portland's well-positioned for that. We're also on the cusp of, I think, becoming a medical research center, which Portland has never been. That's always been true of Boston. It's always been true of some other cities. But Phil and Penny Knight, the owners, the founders of Nike, created this amazing challenge to our medical university, Oregon Health and Sciences University, said, we'll give you $500 million if you raise the same amount. And now OHSU is within $60 million of meeting that challenge. And I think you'll see us really accelerate as a center of medical medical research and medical technology, which we would have never said was part of our economic strategy. But guess what? Just like those software engineers, those doctors and researchers care about quality of life and quality of place as well. They can work in lots of places. They've got skill sets that are in demand. Let's see, should I sit in traffic in Atlanta, or could I be on my bicycle in Portland on my way to work? I think we win in that contest.
What's your vision for the future, Portland?
Sort of more of the same. That sounds a little tepid. But remember, there's only half of our neighborhoods that fit the archetype or the stereotype of how great it is to live in Portland. Tree-lined streets, nice bike lane, farmers market, great local artisanal food, and the locally owned restaurant on the main street. That's true in half of Portland. It's not true in the other half. It's also a city of two tiers when it comes to economic vitality. We have a lot of folks in Portland who are doing very well, making good incomes, able to afford those great old houses and those great old neighborhoods. And we also have a lot of people who are struggling. We have a lot of hunger in Oregon and here in Portland too. We have schools where 80% of the kids are on free and reduced lunch. So we've got a national problem of income disparity, and we have it here too. And I think Portland is going to be a leader now in that human equation of how is it that a city can beat the national odds of people getting left behind, just like we solved the urban equation differently in the last few decades. It used to be true that cities were in decline, everybody was stuck in traffic, urban schools were no good, and there was no real cure for that except just spreading out further.
Leave.
Yeah. Portland proved that wrong. No. Invest in transit. Invest in great public schools. Restore your great old urban neighborhoods. Preserve the old buildings. Build the parks. Clean up the river. And the world beats a path to your door. So we proved the prevailing paradigm wrong, that American cities were in decline. Well, now I think we have a role to play, maybe again fighting above our weight, in proving the American paradigm wrong, that the rich are always going to get richer and the 99% are going to keep falling further behind. I think we can, in our communitarian Portland way, show that, no, we're actually capable of thinking about our neighbors, devising economic strategies that lift more people up to a quality of life that some of us already enjoy. And I'd love for that to be the reason for the tours to be coming to Portland 10 or 20 years from now.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Mayor, as I appreciate your time.
Thank you.